Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
Very well, Andrew. How are you?
Very well as well. Week one is in the books of the Premier League. It's good to be here again talking about meaningful soccer action. Since the World Cup final, you know, we kind of danced around with the ICC, which I was very proud and honored to see that Spurs were named champions of. It's always funny when you're named champions of a competition that ended like weeks ago. Nobody knows who's won until it's like arbitrarily decided.
I'm at dinner on Saturday night and the ESPN app completely stitches you up. Like epic level stitches you up. I get an alert from ESPN. Spurs win rare trophy.
They had to use the word rare.
They had to use trophy.
But like those little ESPN updates don't typically inject like subjective. I guess people would say it's not subjective. It is a rare trophy for them. But
it's not a trophy.
I feel like usually they just, first of all, why is that being sent out as an ESPN alert?
Correct. That is the first question you have to ask. Like, it's an Arsenal fan working the controls at ESPN out to troll you. And immediately I had to send it to you. Had to.
But the same thing happened with Arsenal. Remember when they won the Emirates Cup or whatever it was and they were like celebrating wildly and Petr Cech basically had to tell his teammates, stop celebrating. This is not a thing that matters. So
I remember once I read a match program. I can't remember where it was from. And it was listing Roy Keane's achievements at Nottingham Forest. Which was like, he was an FA Cup runner-up when your mighty Spurs beat them 2-1. And one of them was a preseason tournament, the Zenith Data Systems Cup.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Around what year was this?
91, I guess.
All right.
And there used to be a cup called the Makita Cup, which was Makita Sanders and Drills.
The other one, though, is really...
The Zenith Data Systems Cup.
That's not a trophy that you want to be winning. Certainly not. What a show we have coming up for you. Like I said, the league is back. We've actually got some games to look back over. It wasn't necessarily the most thrilling, exciting week of Premier League action, but it is still a week of Premier League action nevertheless.
If you were to give it a one-word review, my word would be tepid. Yours would be...
Fine. Yeah. It was fine. Like, I didn't not like it.
No.
But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like the World Cup. With how that started in the group stage with like Spain, Portugal, and just all these, you know, 90th minute stoppage time winners and equalizers. And we didn't really get a whole lot of that, but there's still certainly no shortage of things to talk about.
Before we get into that, into the meat of that, two housekeeping things. First of all, the passive aggressive tweets towards us asking for pods and then going, oh, I guess I was spoiled by the World Cup because we put out so many pods in the week. Stop that. If you want more of us, review us on iTunes and send letters to ESPN. And on the iTunes point, we will be doing a raft of help fans next week because the backlog is pretty impressive. Not to sound like I work in the office from office space, but there is a huge backlog, so we need to get through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if ESPN reads letters, like if people were to just send mail. I wonder, is it better to tweet... Who would you tweet at? Like ESPN podcasts or something if you really wanted your voice heard on something? I don't know
I would tweet at ESPN and say in a nice fashion.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to be snarky.
Yeah. Just tweet them and say you want more. How can we get more? Yeah. And that would be the best way to do it, I guess.
Yeah.
Without giving out internal emails.
Right. Certainly not. So, yeah, we're going to go over a few of what I guess I picked out as some of the highlights of the weekend. We've got a what to watch for. We will have a second podcast out for you a little bit later this week where we'll do a more in-depth preview of La Liga because that is coming up. And then that podcast will have your mailbag as well as our red cards and men of the match things, so on and so forth.
Yeah, which I hope I haven't dated at that point. But
I know mine won't.
Okay.
I got them right here.
Confident.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. Let's get into it. Match day one in the books. Let's start with the defending champions, Manchester City. They begin right where they left off. A victory over Arsenal.
a victory.
That's not where they left off, but winning. Winning is what they did very, very frequently last season.
A victory at a canter. This was, if you got excited for this game, I won't say it let you down. If you're a Man City fan, you're very, very pleased. If you're an Arsenal fan, you're less so. But it was meh. It was very, very easy for City, Andrew.
Yeah.
It just was.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I didn't think Manchester City were at their best. And here's the thing. Not only were they not at their best, but look who they chose to not even start.
Sané and Kevin De Bruyne get to sit on the bench away at Arsenal. And
it's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. Now look, if I'm looking, and I am going to look for negatives, did they get a bit sloppy in the final 15 minutes? Yeah. Was Ederson's kicking as solid as it was last season? No. Were there times when the Arsenal press kind of worked? Yeah. But well, they created a few chances, a few turnovers. But generally speaking, it didn't feel like Arsenal away in a big game. It felt like more like a run-of-the-mill away trip to Huddersfield. Yeah. It was very easy for them.
And by the way, not to cut you off, it wasn't just De Bruyne and Sané. Gabriel Jesus also came off the bench in this game.
I mean, yeah, sure.
It's madness.
Well,
they have in reserve.
They have the depth. It's crazy. And there was things that Unai Emery did which people are all over already. And
you want to talk about that right out of the... I was going to talk a little more about Manchester City first.
I don't think there's... What's there to say about City?
Just my first impressions. I'll say this because English Andy is still in me. It's still in my blood. I haven't been able to...
Hello, I'm English Andy.
I still have that. I haven't been able to let go of that from this World Cup just yet. And so I kind of like quietly pumped my fist when Raheem Sterling scored. And I kind of enjoyed his celebration. Kind of like giving it to his haters.
The haters?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because he, even under the best of circumstances, is a lightning rod. We talked about that leading into the World Cup. And then during the World Cup, people were just on him about his poor finishing. He's a really, really good player. He's a great player. This was his 50th Premier League goal that he just scored over the weekend. Only his third from outside the box. But it was a nice goal. I mean, he just blew by defenders, and it was a perfect shot. I don't know. I now root for him. Because there are so many people that don't, and I think their reasons for it are annoying.
Yeah, and Ian Wright said their reasons for rooting against him in certain sectors are racist. He straight out said it on BBC Five Live the other day. I think on the media side of things, there are the right-wing papers that definitely go after him for very strange reasons. And if he's come to that conclusion, it's kind of hard to argue with.
Yeah. So, but my other first impressions from City, aside from Raheem Sterling, like I mentioned, I thought what they can provide off the bench, and even, look, we all know that De Bruyne is going to go back into the starting 11 once they deem him to be fully fit. Jesus and Aguero, it's kind of a balancing act with whatever Pep is feeling any given week, it seems. I would expect Sané to go back into the starting 11, but I don't know if that's quite as much of a given. I think some of it will depend on... I guess how Riyad Mahrez will continue to play, who I thought was okay. I didn't think he was spectacular in this game, but...
Well, he certainly fits into what City wanted to do, very clearly. It was no problem to him. I think you can expect... This feels like... No disrespect to Arsenal, but it felt like an extension of pre-season for City in that they're waiting to get guys back in, and I would expect heavy rotation. Think about the competitions that they have to fight on and the fronts they have to fight on.
Well, the thing is, Bernardo Silva last year, correct me if I'm wrong, but he started fewer than half, I believe. Now, he appeared in a bulk of the games as a sub.
He did, but
he started less than half. It was like 18 starts.
I think
starts.
He started 19 games, maybe.
Okay, so was it half? But like he is a really good player, and you saw it from him with the goal that he scored. He's a great distributor. Like, you just wonder, it's a numbers game. Somebody's going to be caught out on this thing. And I don't know who it's a good problem for Pep Guardiola to have, but it is a problem in terms of, like, you don't want somebody who's in form to then be put on the bench and now you kind of lose them. I don't know. He's going to have some difficult decisions to make throughout the course of the season. And you kind of got a taste of that in this first game. But yeah, let's go to Arsenal now. I know you're brimming with thoughts and feelings.
Well, I think the first thing is that it's Emery's first game, and we spoke on the preview pods about, he talked about energy and pressing and things like that. Well, starting off from that game straight away, I don't think you can play Ozil and Mkhitaryan in the same line if you're going to do that. I think Aubameyang's isolated again. How can this keep happening? They're not getting the best out of him. I think Lacazette has to start. I was surprised that Guendouzi started the game, although I'm not as harsh and as critical of the 19-year-old as other people are, but I was surprised. I would have started Torreira and screened that back line. Also, the goalkeeper. So you want to play out from the back. Pragmatically speaking, is this the game to begin that process? I think you have to be horses for courses. And in that sense, you don't do this against Manchester City. They are the best team at winning the ball off in from teams in possession, pressing and doing all that thing. Well, maybe Liverpool could argue that they're even better at it. But the point being, this is not the side to do it at. I would have gone much more simplistic. I think Petr Cech's kickouts should have been old school. Down the field. I know Arsenal aren't a hugely physically imposing team, but Aubameyang can compete. Ramsey can compete. Try and get Manchester City turned, because you're not going to beat them at their own game. There's only one team beat them at their own game last season, and that was Liverpool. Second 45 minutes in the Manchester Derby aside. Liverpool were able to press and get the ball off them, but how many teams can actually do that? I didn't understand what he was doing. And I don't want to be too critical, because he's obviously trying to ease the team from the Wenger era into his own era. And ideas take time to implement. And I understand that. Starting Maitland-Niles, I know he got injured, well, but I don't know what I have done that either.
To address some of those things, first off,
there's a lot there.
There is. I agree with a bulk of that. I guess it's just a difference of opinion. I didn't think that Guendouzi was good.
Well, first of all,
he was partially to blame on the first goal,
well,
and then he
I don't think so at all.
All right, fine, but then he was completely bailed out by good goalkeeping in the way he misplayed the ball that Sergio Aguero then went one on one.
That was one mistake where instead of trying to control it with his chest or put his head on it and just head it straight back, he tried to stab it or and it bounced underneath him.
Okay. That was one mistake. Little bit of a Mrs. Lincoln there.
Yeah, but he got bailed out, didn't he?
He did.
By the way, Aguero should have just squared it, and it could have been different. But
if he had played the ball to De Bruyne?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
But I think I have to pick you up on the first goal, Andrew.
Okay.
So when you've got a player, when you're facing a player like Sterling, you want to show him into traffic, into the centre, and that's what he did. And he had an arm on Sterling right as he was about to wind up to shoot. So when you push him forward, or right into the centre, at some point, one of the centre halves or a defender or a midfielder has to step out from the edge of the box and attack the ball, try and get a block on. No one does it. And if you look at Guendouzi's arms, he puts his arms out like, why did nobody do it? Socrates didn't do it, nobody else did it.
That's fair. I'm not
and that worries
was
me about the Arsenal backline, that they haven't really improved that much up there. They're still hesitant. I mean, Socrates gave away a penalty almost.
He looked very slow.
Right, slow.
Yeah.
And I think it was Rafa Honigstein tweeted out, classic Socrates, and Rafa would have seen a lot of him.
Absolutely.
Which makes me worry then about what Arsenal have paid for.
And then the other thing that you said about Torreira not getting the start, I don't think that was necessarily a decision made out of any sort of tactical awareness. I thought that was just not fully fit from his run in the World Cup with Uruguay.
Yeah, I know. But
I mean, Torreira, he's gonna be a starter for them.
Paul Pogba played
on that's why
Paul
Pogba didn't start. I mean,
he went out in the quarterfinals. Paul Pogba went out at the final.
Every guy is different. I can't tell you why Kevin De Bruyne is not ready or Torreira is not ready.
He's
but
ready
Pogba
enough to
is.
Come on, but he's not ready enough to start.
Some guys maybe can't give the full 90 yet, so you bring him on for 30 minutes and see what he can do. That's not egregious to me.
Well, granted, Xhaka and Guendouzi just seemed like a weird partnership back there.
Yeah, that's fair, and I don't think that's going to be a regular partnership for Arsenal. Not to defend them, I feel dirty doing that almost, but I feel like I've heard a lot of harsh criticism levied against them over the course of this week, and I feel
this
like,
week.
Yeah, well, but specifically this week, that feels really unfair to me. We knew that this was going to be a project. All right, it's a first year manager playing a largely different squad from what Arsenal has had in the past, playing a completely different style. And, oh, by the way, they're going to play their first game against one of the best teams that we've seen in the last 30 years.
But you say a different style. Playing a different style with players that can't play it.
Well, we don't know
well,
that
we
yet.
We know Cech can't play out from the back.
And
we
he's
know he
not
can't
he's
do
not
it.
Going to be their long-term option to keep.
We know Mkhitaryan Ozil. I'll put my head on the chopping block here and say I don't think Mkhitaryan and Ozil can play in the same team together.
That very well may be true.
Yeah.
And that's a criticism that Ozil has heard quite frequently because he's not willing to do a lot of the things that managers want in terms of tracking back. But I just feel like people are jumping to so many conclusions after a game that you simply can't do that
and
yet.
He's testing the waters. He definitely is. I just would have gone about it another way.
Like, if this happened to Arsenal against Brighton, I would be saying, you know, everyone take a step back. It's just one game under a new manager. We knew that this Arsenal side wasn't going to be world beaters. But it's Manchester City. Like, we're getting on Arsenal for giving away possession high up the field. Well, City does that to everyone. They're one of the best teams we've ever seen do that. So we have
right. So don't play that way against them. Don't make it easy. That's the argument.
Well, maybe he's willing to take the L in right. his first game against Manchester City. Let them play this style. Let them learn trial by fire a little bit. And then the next time you go out there, hopefully it'll be a little bit easier because it's not Manchester City that you're having to do that against.
I broke a cardinal rule.
What's
I went
that?
On Arsenal Fan TV afterwards.
And then those troops.
It was Claude. Claude was there. But, no, it wasn't Claude. It was the other guy.
Those are the only two. That
I'll tell you, the leash will be short for Emery with these guys.
Yeah. Well, you called that last week.
Yeah, definitely.
Here was Stuart Robson talking about Arsenal's problem versus Manchester City.
When they tried to play out from the back, they didn't do it particularly well. It looked to me as if they didn't quite know what they were trying to do. When you play out from the back, you're trying to get better quality into the front place. You're trying to get those passes from a shorter distance. Arsenal didn't get that right. They played into Man City's hands. They were caught in possession too many times. And if you are going to play out from the back, you need a better goalkeeper than Petr Cech. Too many times he gave the ball away. It didn't seem to know what they were trying to do. It was poor display from Arsenal when they did try and play out from the back.
Gave it away, Stewie. He nearly kicked it into his own net.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Petr Cech apparently has really worked on so many elements of his game over the summer, and apparently fitness-wise as well, because he's in a fight to maintain his position, which I think is great that he's willing to do it. I just think Emery threw him under the bus a little bit because he just can't play that way. It's very hard.
Maybe. And then did you see Petr Cech got into it with Bayer Leverkusen's Twitter account?
Yeah, we'll probably save that for the next podcast. Oh. I have things to say about that.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my. Mm. Speaking of the goalkeeper, I can't believe you did this to me. Because to take people behind the curtain, leading into each podcast, I'll go online and find some audio clips that I want to use.
Yeah.
JJ will go online, find some, and then he emails them to me, and I put them in our system. When you sent me this one from Tony Adams, I said, this is a slap to the face.
Well, before you play this, you gave me a quote from Paul Merson. So
right.
I thought I would retort with something more sensible. So Merson said, if you want to keep on coming along, making money and finishing fifth or sixth, nothing has to change. But if you want to break in, get to that level, it's going to need a better mentality of player. I don't think the players are mentally strong enough. I don't see it. When it went 2-0 and the picture panned away and Bernardo Silva ran to the crowd, it was like Laurel and Hardy with Mesut Ozil. That's the end of the game.
This is what I'm talking about when I'm saying incredibly harsh criticism after one game under a new manager against Manchester City.
There have been changes. There have been changes. You can't say there hasn't been. They are trying to be better. They've Sven Mislintat in as appointed last year while Wenger was still there to be their new sporting director or director of football, whatever you want to say. They have bought. They bought Aubameyang. From what we believe, Wenger didn't want to make these purchases, but they were made.
On the heels of having bought Lacazette.
Lacazette's come in as well. Do they need more players? Yes, they do. Torreira's come in and they have a new manager. Don't say there isn't change.
It's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
I think it's so funny when people in the media, pundits like Paul Merson, tell fans, you know, oh my God, the overreactions from fans. These guys are just as bad.
But also mentality. How do you measure that? Like, you can't talk to me about the mentality of Torreira. We haven't seen him play yet.
Yeah.
And for what I've seen, he could be a return to the old school. I said Arsenal need bastards in the middle of the field. Like, guys who can get on the ball and control it, but also can win tackles and solidify in front of any defence that they have. But Tony Adams, I agree with Tony Adams' initial criticisms. which we're going to play.
Yeah, here's what the reason I was so annoyed with it.
Well, we know why.
Well, maybe not everybody. Before the World Cup, Tony Adams said that England wasn't going to be able to do anything because they had too many Spurs players.
But he was losing mentality.
Right, he wasn't just trolling for the sake of trolling. Like, he had reasons behind it that these guys don't know how to win. But I think we all saw how that played out. At any rate, here's Tony Adams on Talk Sport talking about choosing Cech over Leno.
Go with your goalkeeper, Leno. You know, put him in goal. I love Peter Cech. I think he's a great guy and a lovely. He's been a great pro. But come on. Let's go with a new guy. Let's work at him. Let's get your back four and let's put your goalkeeper in. Get Torreira in and let's go for it. You know, that was the only thing. I think you can, as a coach, you can get away with it if you put your players in there. Do you know what I mean? But to be reluctant, put a kid in, make the noise, is massive left back type of thing. I don't understand those decisions. If I was sports director of Arsenal, I'd be knocking on English door this morning and going, come on. With all these selections, why did you do that? Why did you do that? I think we've got a lot of things wrong yesterday.
I've had it. I've had it with everyone. This is utter nonsense. This is complete utter.
No.
He doesn't have a fully fit team yet.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say you should be knocking on doors or things like that. But the idea that you should just back with the players you've bought and play them from the get-go, I kind of agree with that.
Oh, my God. It's the first game of the season, and these guys are coming off World Cup summers. Arsenal were hardly the only team not
just
to play
thought,
their,
I just
their
thought
first
he should have had
preferred 11.
The courage of his convictions and played Torreira. I would have played...
You see, that comment right there feels hypocritical to me. He should have... What'd you say? The
courage of his convictions.
All right, so...
He's bought these players in. He's not bought them to... He hasn't bought Leno sit on the bench.
So he should have the courage of his convictions to play guys that aren't fully fit.
But you don't...
But he shouldn't have the courage of his convictions to stick with the style that he wants
Leno's
to play with.
So Leno's not fit. Lichtsteiner's not fit.
For what? Well,
come on.
I don't know that Lichtsteiner will be a preferred fullback under
an experienced,
when he's as fit as 100%.
How about an experienced head there playing in that back four against Manchester City?
I can't speak to these guys coming off World Cup summers. A lot of teams didn't play players this past weekend who were in the World Cup, so I'm not going to get on him for that. But to say he should have the courage of his convictions to play these guys, but then you say that he shouldn't when it comes to the style that he wants to play, that he should have changed because of who he was facing.
No.
Wouldn't that be betraying his courage of conviction if he decided not to play the ball out of the back?
Yeah, play the ball out of the back, but play the players that can do it. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know.
That's a pretty simple formula.
I don't get you.
This turned into Arsenal Fan TV. No, fam, don't interrupt me, blood. No, don't. We got to play proper football. Got to play football out from the back, fam.
I don't know what the Arsenal fans want, to be honest.
We're going
to
find out soon enough.
Let's see. Liverpool, we move on to that now. They look really good in their debut performance against West Ham of this season. So here we go.
Yeah.
I mean, the title talk is on. It seems like after one
not
week...
Not for me, it's
they,
not.
So you're going to do that thing that fans do.
Yeah, not try to... I'm going to do the... What is it?
But not because you don't believe it. Only because you... Like, it's this thing that fans... Like, the psychological... issue that fans have sometimes. There's a certain segment of fans that are too boastful and too obnoxious, and then there's fans like you, I do this too, where I know inside you believe that you should be that Liverpool are legitimate title contenders. But you're gonna continue to downplay that and you're gonna talk it down and tamp it down.
Well, first of all, we do a podcast for many different people who are supporters of many different teams, and I do sometimes think that I go Liverpool centric and I try to curb it a wee bit.
You know. Oh, that's an actual stare of anger. Good.
But
get angry.
But also, you know, you're on about it's game one, yada yada, as you know, refers to Arsenal and that they've got to be given time, etc., etc. West Ham United were so bad at the weekend.
Yeah, they were. But I will tell you from a neutral's perspective, who doesn't care about offending whoever or whatever, I thought Liverpool looked scary good.
I'll tell you, the first 25 minutes, the way they popped that ball and moved around. I mean, Keita looks like he's been playing in the team for 10 years.
Yep.
It was so quick. It was so fast. West Ham tried to be compact. Didn't work, because in being compact and kind of defending the width of the 18-yard line, that gave Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold to a lesser extent, because I've never seen so many shanked crosses.
Oh my God. I thought I was watching Jesus Nava.
Oh, that is a nice reference there. Unbelievably, they were marauding down the flanks. It was just, Manuel Pellegrini's team were just caught in the crosshairs of this team, and they looked completely shell shocked. But something Keita did really just stood out for me. I mean, you talked specifically in the Premier League previews about his ability, like, to dribble as a centre midfielder, to beat people and go past people. But he's doing it with purpose. He drove and drove and drove on the first goal, and he sees the centre half or the last defender, and I'm like, release it. When I wanted him to release it, would have been too early.
Yeah.
He draws the defender in, and with the outside of his boot plays Robertson in. There was a perfection and a timing to that, and a calculation in everything that he did. Robertson swings it in, and it's a very good goal. Now, the Mane second goal was offside, there's no question. But Liverpool were cutting them open at will. It was exciting. I've got many friends who are Liverpool fans, including some mutual friends like Tom Fitz, who are really, really excited. Mm-hmm. But I am more on the classic Scouser, and I'm trying to calm down.
Come on, calm down.
What is that from?
That is from a sketch by Harry Enfield from the late 80s, early 90s, where they basically put on bubble perms, which every Liverpool player had for a while, mustaches, and went down, calm down. They were always fighting, which seemed to be a Scouse way of life.
Yeah, because I watched a little bit more of that, and it was really funny.
It was funny, yeah. It's basically certain stereotypical characteristics of Scouse people and turning it up to 11.
Yeah. With what you said about Naby Keita, specifically on that the first goal that he helped set up, I thought it just showed a certain level of trust in his own ability,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does.
Like, just knowing that I can draw the defense in, and I can do that because I'm going to perfectly weight this ball to Robertson.
But knowing that it was the right thing to do, knowing that there was no way to recover then, if he plays that ball a little bit earlier to Robertson, this actual... You know, there's an actual chance the defender can come out and do something. He's done that way. And it's a simple thing.
Yeah.
But I was as impressed by every aspect of his game, albeit against a West Ham midfield that was totally overrun. Declan Rice and Mark Noble didn't know what hit them. And one of them was, the younger, was withdrawn at halftime. He didn't look happy about it. But to be honest with you, I mean...
It was relentless from Liverpool. And the thing
Robert
that
Snodgrass came into the game. And that stood out to me.
Why is that?
If you're a West Ham fan and you spent all this money and you're kind of just like struggling, to think that Snodgrass is still around and that he's going to make a change in a game like that is puzzling.
The thing with Liverpool for me, I love the way that they attack the middle of the box, like right around like the penalty spot area. I feel like they're just constantly playing in low balls. Like they're going to force your defense to be on your game constantly. Every clearance attempt has to be exactly right. I just feel like that they're always playing a ball in to like right around that like kind of 10-yard, 12-yard area low, and there's always Liverpool players streaking through the middle. They looked really good. It's only one game, but so far from what we've seen, they looked good. Craig Burley would agree. He was on ESPN FC talking about Liverpool.
Keita is dynamic. If Salah can continue his form... I know Paul's a big fan of Firmino. They've improved the defence. They look as if they've improved the goalkeeping position. There is no reason whatsoever why they can't have a right good bash at Man City. They're not there. They haven't got the same quality as Man City in terms of the whole squad, but they've certainly improved on last season in terms of what he's got to select. And that's all you can ask at this moment in time. They look really good.
Yep. I would agree.
Look, I'm really excited as well. But I will say this. Palace away is going to tell me a little bit about individual improvement. You saw how much trouble they gave Liverpool in this fixture last season, towards the end of last season. And I'm going to be interested to see how players like Trent Alexander-Arnold have come on. No, they've come on in leaps and bounds. But it's interesting to see second season syndrome with these players.
Yeah. Also, one other thing, props to Daniel Sturridge, I would say. On for, what was it, 27 seconds?
First touch of the ball, yeah. Albeit kind of...
Wasn't beautiful.
I feel like there was a little bit of a touch from the defender as well, but whatever.
Yeah, maybe.
No, but I'm delighted for him.
Yeah.
And right now, he's got to be happy with his role. You think where he was 5-6 months ago, injured in his debut on loan at West Brom, now he's back in. And look, if he's going to be like a replacement for Salah or Mane or somebody up front, he'll be happy with that. For now, Andrew, seriously, think of where he was.
That's true. Let's see. Chelsea, they swat aside Huddersfield 3-0.
What to tell from this one? From what I saw, the highlights, because I actually watched Fulham and Crystal Palace instead. From what I saw, Huddersfield came out and played a little bit, which probably wasn't a good
idea. Against them.
Yeah, it wasn't a good idea.
Yeah. I think it was a good debut for Jorginho. I guess the main thing for me that will be interesting to kind of monitor as we continue to watch Chelsea play, N'Golo Kante scored the first goal. Not a thing that he does very often. I think the last goal that he scored was like September of 2017. It feels like he's going to be used maybe in a little bit more of an attack-minded role.
To the right of Jorginho, that could work for him because he's got the engine to get onto things. Whether he has the finesse to finish chances,
I wouldn't know about that. But
look where Milner played for Liverpool as well. He played a little bit to the right, and Wijnaldum took up that base position in the three in midfield. So you have to be adaptable. You have to be able to do these things. I think Kante's got the skill level and the ability to do it. It's going to be a little bit of a change, but Sarri likes Jorginho as that pivot point, as that basically tempo setter for the team. So he's going to have to look. Kante can't do what Jorginho can do. Jorginho can't do what Kante do. So it's a little bit of, you know, trying to fit them in to the way he wants to play. I mean, if I'm Kante, I'm still okay with it.
Yeah, I would think so. Look, he scored a goal. He can't be that upset about
Pedro
it.
Pedro was good too.
Yeah, and he scored late as well. I mean, look, everything we heard about Chelsea before this, we talked about what David Luiz said, how they haven't had a ton of time to get used to this. So for this to be their debut in this new style that Sarri wants to play, and for them to come out and score three goals and look pretty good in the process, I think that it's encouraging.
Now, some of our Chelsea listeners tweeted us on Saturday and they were concerned about David Luiz at centre back. He's going to be tested more. We're still not sure about that. Ross Barkley is well started. Chances are Kovac is just going to come in and remove him from that role. We don't know though. And Timo Bakayoko is on his way to AC Milan.
Boy, that ended quickly.
I remember, Andrew, this is how I remember how I hold grudges. I remember last season crushing him on the podcast and some Chelsea fan tweeting us, "You don't know what you're talking about, he's one of the best players."
That's what they said.
Yeah, that he'd been brilliant. It was the West Ham game where he had a dreadful game away at West Ham in which they lost. Uh-huh. And I said, he was dire and I don't know what he does in this team. Oh, last week he was brilliant. Haven't you been watching?
Boy, you really do. You don't let go.
I think we have got a grudge drop there that we haven't used in a while, where I put people on a list, and if you get on the list, that's it. I never forget.
If someone crosses me, I hate them forever, and probably irrationally.
That's you.
Evidence.
That's your JJ, everybody.
That's me.
Yep. Let's see. A couple other stories quickly from the weekend. Manchester United open up with a win, so all's well. Boy, the things that Pogba said afterwards.
Yeah, can I quote them?
Yeah, of course.
This is from The Guardian, who always get things right. "It was an impressive display that led to a standing ovation and hope that the Old Trafford crowd would now see the best from a supremely talented midfielder. What do you mean being the real Pogba?" he asked. "You have to know one thing. A player that gets chosen and is happy, you always feel more comfortable than when he's not happy. That's all I say." Pogba was pushed on his response and asked that, "If you're not happy, you cannot give your best." When asked about what represents happiness and comfort for him, "There are things that I cannot say. Otherwise, I will get fined."
He does not get along with this manager. Now, what I would say to Pogba, look, I get it. We're all human beings. Even professional athletes are also human beings.
I'm imagining you saying this to Pogba, by the way.
So, like, I do understand that, you know, emotions and feelings can't be removed. But, man, it's hard to take that comment. You've just come, like, your life is awesome, man. You just won a World Cup. You're so handsomely paid. You're one of the most expensive professional footballers on the planet. You're a star for Manchester United. Okay, you don't like your manager. Like that's probably true of like 70% of the league. So to hear him say things like, "I can't give my best if I'm not happy," or whatever that quote was, I've been trying to root for him in this thing because I think I've grown to kind of like him, and a lot of the things that came out of the French camp during the World Cup about the kind of leader he is, like, it kind of paints a picture of a guy that maybe isn't always, like, that's not the portrayal you get from what he does at Manchester United.
Well, not the, I mean...
But quotes like that just don't sit well with me.
I mean, the summer kind of dispels some of the thoughts many people had about Pogba emerging from the team, that he's some kind of social media obsessed nitwit, which he clearly isn't.
That's totally unfair. And the other thing about that too, and look, again, this is strictly from a guy who hosts a podcast. I don't have any ears on the inside with Manchester United. But okay, let's say that Pogba and Jose Mourinho have this problem with one another. Maybe Mourinho realized he went a little bit too far. And maybe naming Pogba as captain was the beginning stages of Mourinho trying to extend an olive branch. Like, this is a thing that coaches do in any sport. They break guys down and then they try to build them back up. Like, this is coaching 101. So maybe Mourinho goes a little bit too far with it sometimes, but I kind of wish that maybe Pogba had followed suit. Okay, Mourinho is now, he's named you captain. You're obviously right back into the starting 11 despite going off for a long summer at the World Cup. Maybe you can now respond in kind and start to mend whatever this gap is between the two of them, and instead Pogba went the other way.
A gap that's been largely formed by the manager's comments.
You're right.
After the World Cup, what did he say?
Think
about those barbed comments.
You're completely right. But
this is a manager that names Antonio Valencia captain, and then when he gets injured, calls him a fatty.
You're not wrong, but who is it helping? Unless Pogba wants to leave and he's trying to force a move, who is it helping for him to then continue the rift where the manager maybe is trying to heal it?
But all the evidence that we've ever had about Mourinho is that he likes this constant sense of tension around the team, that's the best way the conflict emerges, from the fires of conflict emerges a great team. That seems to be his theory. And it only lasts.
I love dramatic quotes like that.
Well, I just made that up.
Ugh. No, I don't think so much of
it. You're not buying it?
No. From the fires of conflict.
I'm trying to think of where in the coaching manual of Lombardi is, demean them at every moment?
He's not the first coach to do that. Probably did. I've heard interviews with Jerry Kramer. Talked about relentless with them.
Yeah.
It's what coaches do. They break guys down and they rebuild them.
I'm not sure what Mourinho does is exactly what Lombardi did.
Let's see. Richarlison. What a flying start for him. For Everton.
Yeah.
But they ultimately are undone and had to settle for a 2-2 draw, which I think would leave Everton fans a little bit disappointed.
We tagged it as probably the game of the weekend.
Yeah, I think I would say that it was. His debut aside, because he was excellent.
Well, the first goal, can I talk about that?
Yeah.
Remember we spoke last week on the podcast about goals we could score. We could have scored that. And it was also a nod to Big Sam. It was a free kick taken by Leighton Baines, whipped in, Michael Keane's big head went towards it, missed it, he bundled the defender out of the way, and it fell to Richarlison, who I think he hit it, it went in off his knee or his shin or something. Classic Sam. Sam was probably at home with a pint of wine, and he nodded.
Yeah. On that thing about goals that we could have scored, I have something for that in a moment, but not quite yet.
But the second goal was outstanding. Really, really good. Uses defender as a kind of a shield and then bends it beyond Rui Patricio into the one place he can't get to it, low into the bottom corner. Really accomplished finish.
Yeah. Now, this game kind of turned a little bit on a somewhat controversial red card, I think you'd have to say, for Phil Jagielka. Relatively early in this match, it changed the complexion of the game. Before I play this, I have a cut here from Peter Walton, who's like the officiating expert.
Mm.
Did you think it was a red?
Probably. Just about.
I don't know. I've watched it so many times, I really don't know.
When you see that ball move.
Yeah. Like, it's a sloppy first touch, so you don't want to give Jagielka the benefit of the doubt because he put himself in trouble.
And he definitely comes down on the side of his ankle.
But he does win the ball, clearly.
First.
Now, I know you can... You can win a challenge
and
guilty of a red card offense. Here's what Peter Walton said about it.
He miscontrolled the ball, I think, and stretched or overstretched to retrieve that ball back. And in doing so, caught the Wolves striker squarely on the shin. The referee saw it and administered a red card, and there was a hell of a, you know, a kerfuffle about that. Some people saying, "What's it for?" And when you look at the stills, and when you look at the action replay, you can see that Jagielka's foot is extended. It's with force.
Force was the last word there.
Mm.
I think we just kind of have to recalibrate our minds a little bit and just know that the game is called a little bit differently than even 5 years ago, 10 yeah. years ago, 50. Like, it just,
like, there's no point saying back in the day they would have got away with that. I definitely think that's
they
true.
They would have.
Yeah.
But that's just not where we are anymore.
No.
This stuff like this, if you make contact in the way that Jagielka did with a shin or an ankle,
and it's with your studs showing in the bottom of the foot, then yeah. that's the way it's going to
like,
be.
If I was an Everton fan, like, if you're an Everton fan and you were mad about this, I understand that. But I also understand why it was given.
I would have been more aggrieved. Well, not more aggrieved. Obviously, sending off is huge. But did you see where the free kick was taken from? it's advanced well beyond where the actual foul occurred. It gave Neves a real advantage in striking the ball. Now, he struck the ball very well. Pickford, for me, if you're going to put a wall there, you got to trust it. And he's too far on the wall, on the side that the wall is covering. He takes a step and it just leaves an enormous gap for a player of the talent of Neves, who buries it.
Wow. Pickford, just like that. Forget about everything he did over the summer. It's meaningless now.
But back, I'm doing what you said I should do. He was built up. Now I'm knocking him down.
You're coaching. You're coaching. And then last but not least, Tottenham make it past Newcastle thanks to headers from Vertonghen and Dele Alli. What I wanted to say to you was, you got some nerve saying that you'll walk on to a pitch and score because I'm JJ and that's
what I do. What
I'm JJ Devaney. I score goals.
It's not what I said, but anyway,
meanwhile,
go on. Misrepresent me.
Meanwhile, Jan Vertonghen is one of the best players in the league. He's a starter for Belgium, one of the best international sides and national teams in the
right.
world.
Okay, I know who he is.
He just scored his first goal in 5 years.
Yeah.
But you think you could walk on and score tomorrow. It's not easy.
Dude, you're forgetting the premise of the tweet. The premise of this scenario was, you're up front, you're as fit as...
Was that in the premise?
Yes. You
striker?
Start up front. Yeah. He's not a striker.
I don't know if I remember that.
Yes.
I think the position was left...
Yes. Oh, come on. No,
left
no.
in a state of ambiguity.
I could play... First of all, no one would allow me to play an entire Premier League season at left back. All right? The calamity.
I'm just saying, it's been 5 years since one of the best players in the league scored a goal. So who do you think you are? That's what I want to know.
No, it's just any way you can to chip away at my confidence.
Thank God for goal line technology. Obviously, I say that as a Spurs fan, but I mean, that's about the closest I've ever
yeah,
seen.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
It was like millimeters
yeah.
that crossed the line. Not the greatest performance ever. Harry Kane, once again, not scoring in August, and he didn't look... He just looked a little bit off to me.
Yeah.
Eric Dier was somewhat lucky to have remained in that game. I thought on a different day he would have been handed a second yellow.
That's fair.
But I'll tell you what, man, I don't want to go overboard in getting on this guy, or two guys. The right side for Spurs, and it will get better. They chose not to start Kieran Trippier just yet, another player coming off a World Cup who would be in the first team.
Tired young men.
Apparently. I mean, we saw him, he didn't look fully fit at the end against Croatia. For England, but like that right side of Aurier and Sissoko is tough to watch at times. Now, I know Aurier did wind up setting up Dele Alli's goal on a beautiful ball, but he's just so erratic.
Yeah, you don't know what you're going to get from
he's
him.
So
and he
erratic.
Flies into tackles where you're like, why'd you stay on your feet?
In positions where it just doesn't, you don't need to be doing that.
Yeah.
He puts Eric Dier in some really difficult positions where he basically forced Dier into a yellow card because he just allows his man to go by him. He's a thrill a minute, man.
I mean, Eric Dier has been forced into a difficult position by being consistently picked for professional football teams. So,
you've just chosen him as a punching bag. You have no facts to back this up.
Oh, my God.
But you've decided... You know what? I need to pick somebody on Andrew's team that I'm going to just hate on.
No.
That I know he likes.
No, I could easily go for Aurier. He's got previous.
But you've
in
decided.
Many areas. No, Dyer's not a good footballer.
Eric Dier, speaking of which, said this afterwards. It's a great challenge for us to shut everyone up.
Like me.
We're going to enjoy that challenge. We've got a fantastic squad here with fantastic players in every position. To strengthen, it is not easy. All the other teams around us might have signed players, but not many of those are better than the players they've already got. If you're trying to create a better atmosphere or give the team a boost, then that's cool, but we'll find the same boost in a different way.
That's the words of a man who's delighted there's no one coming in because there's no one to challenge his position.
Well, that's not true. There's already challenge on that squad, but Victor Wanyama is not healthy. Dyer is sort of the cover for Wanyama. He's a depth player right now.
Okay.
But, you know, I do get what he's saying. He's saying that, like, we're good. We don't need to bring in guys for no reason.
I
don't know if I agree with it, but I understand why players on the team would feel that way.
Somebody tweeted us last week, it was a DM and I replied to it, just asking that specific question, where are Spurs at? They haven't signed anybody. And I think it's still a very good squad, but to get them to push on, like we always said, to realize the potential of this team, you feel like you're standing still if you don't buy someone else or if you don't get add to the squad. That is the only point to be made. Just because someone hasn't been added doesn't make Eriksen, doesn't make Kane, doesn't make Dele Alli poorer players. But you want to have a sense that you are getting better, getting towards your aim, and drafting in recruits is the way that's done.
It's case in point with Davinson Sanchez last summer. Signing a player in an area of the field where you thought you were good with Vertonghen and Alderweireld, but now look at him. He's one of the best young players on the team, maybe even in the league. So, I mean, I would agree with you. Before we move on here, JJ, it's been a little while. People have enjoyed this.
I know what's coming.
Thought I'd give you a little trivia from the first weekend.
Ah, okay.
What do you say? I should say now that all of these are courtesy of me just scrolling through the Opta Twitter timeline.
That's unfair. That's all stats and stuff. I haven't had a look at the Opta. Go on.
What kind of trivia is there without stats and stuff?
All right, go on.
Actually, you know what? I take that back. We did that beautiful game of Who Are You at the end of the World Cup. That wasn't all stats and stuff. Ready?
Yeah.
Liverpool became the fourth club to reach 500 Premier League wins over the weekend. Name the other three.
Manchester United.
Correct.
Chelsea.
Correct.
And the Arsenal.
That is correct. Very good. Wilfried Zaha scored his 23rd goal for Crystal Palace over the weekend. That's tied with this former player for the most goals in Palace's Premier League history.
Say that again.
Wilfried Zaha scored his 23rd goal for Crystal Palace over the weekend. That's tied with this former player for the most goals in Crystal Palace's Premier League history.
Andy Johnson.
No. Chris Armstrong.
Ah!
And last one for you. Paul Pogba has scored in 11 Premier League games, and United have won all of them. That's a record that he shares with this former Liverpool Dutch international.
Huh. Paul Pogba, say that again.
Paul Pogba has scored in 11 Premier League games, and Manchester United have won every single one of them. That is a record. He shares that record with this former Liverpool player, who is a Dutch international.
Former Liverpool player?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm blanking.
He was never a star for Liverpool.
Why am I blanking here? Go on.
Ryan Babel.
I would not.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't had that many Dutch in the last few years, but I would not put Babel in the mix. Huh? By the way, Babel is still playing.
Yeah, where is he? Is he in Turkey?
Yeah, he's at a decent level, actually.
I'd have to look. I don't actually know where he is.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow. Fun.
You hated it.
I didn't hate it.
Let's see. Oh my goodness. I almost forgot before we move on. Oh, it's back, JJ.
He plays for Besiktas.
Yeah.
Ryan Babel.
In Turkey.
Yeah.
It's back. Baldness is back, but there's a way to prevent it. Hims. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. The thing is, when you start to notice that it's going, then it's already too late.
Andy Johnson, the
bald.
Crystal Palace player, bald.
Completely bald. I don't associate him with Crystal Palace.
You associate him with Everton.
Or Fulham, even.
But he got his move because he was good at Palace.
Well, I associate him with some of those
penalty king. He could score a penalty.
Oh, Andy Johnson. I would ask him if that hairline is slowly starting to move backwards. Any bald spots yet, Andy? Yeah, lots
Thomas
of them.
Gravison.
Yeah,
bald.
Yeah, I ask you: do you want a bald spot to pop up, or do
Lee
you want
Carsley,
to do something about
bald.
It first? Do you want your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science? 4hims.com. That's your solution—a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or gas station counter-supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room. No awkward doctor visits. What is an awkward doctor? Well, whatever.
An awkward doctor? Oh, he's just like, you know, really, he's bad with the needle.
Jeez, yeah,
that would be awkward. Oh, my God.
You can spare yourself all this by going to forhims.com. Just answer a few quick questions. Doctor will review and can prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. Oh, man, this is good service.
As easy as it gets.
Order now. Listeners to this podcast can get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last.
See website
for full details. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor or pharmacy. Just go to forhims.com/offside. That's forhims.com/offside. Forhims.com/offside.
Ivan De La Peña, he was bald. He played for Lazio and Barcelona.
Lots of bald soccer players. Really are a whole... We should probably come up with like our four hymns 11.
Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, Guzan... Or, yeah, we go Guzan and Net.
Ooh, okay. Guzan and Net. We could have Yapstam as a centre back.
Yeah.
We could have De La Peña and Gravesen in midfield.
Ooh.
Jordi Cruyff on the wing. Dion Dublin up front.
I think we got something here.
Baldies.
So, I mean, where's Zidane in this? I would imagine
he'd be in that
Roberto
midfield.
Carlos, or
yeah, they'd all be in there.
Yeah. What to watch for, JJ? Champions League qualifying. Well, you watched it today, and if you're a Celtic fan, you hated what you watched.
Yeah,
they are out of the Champions League after losing to AEK Athens 3-2 on aggregate. It was 1-1 going into the second leg today. Athens went up 2-0 after 50 minutes. Scott Sinclair pulled one back, but that was it. Celtic now go into the Europa League playoff, where they'll face either Spartak Jirmala of Latvia or Saduva Marijampol of Lithuania. Not the opponents that Celtic fans were expecting to see in European play.
No, and Matt Sears tweeted us, those how would Celtic do in the Premier League questions might start to cool off. Because it's always on about, well, here's the thing for Matt. Celtic would do fabulously in the Premier League, not this team. The club as a club would do fabulously. And that's why people are, they're such a massive club. Not having them in Europe is...
They could still be in Europe if they get through the Europa League qualifying.
And they're in the Europa League with the Rangers, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it certainly could be. AEK, by the way, now go on to face Hungarian side MOLVD in the Champions League playoffs.
AEK aren't great, but they should get through in that next round.
It's brutal for Celtic because they really did come close late in one of the last touches of the ball.
It was flicked with the heel.
Logo Simunovic.
Simunovic. And it
came within inches.
I thought it was curling in. Now, the Greeks did such an amount of time wasting at the end, but I was listening to the Celtic TV commentators, and at one point, right towards the end, I think it was in like the 89th, 88th minute, there's a clash of heads in the box. And this is the bias you get from Celtic TV. As the AEK centre half is coming up off the turf, the Celtic TV commentator said, I don't see much there, as in, I don't think much happened. There's blood gushing from his head onto his arms and his hands. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
By the way, I did contact the head of the Scottish FA just to get his feedback on what it's like to be Scottish in European football.
It's being Scottish with the lowest of the low.
You were able to get him on the phone today.
Yeah, that's all I got from him, and then he hung up.
Understandable. The UEFA Super Cup, Wednesday, 3 o'clock. It's a Madrid derby. Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. Your two European victors from a year ago.
Yeah, in Tallinn, Estonia, at the Eile Kock Arena, 15,000-seater stadium. Now, I'm not saying Estonia shouldn't have this game, but a little bit strange.
Yeah, very.
Wasn't it every year deemed to be in Monaco? It had to be in Monaco.
15,000, did you say?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's tiny.
Yeah. Well, if you get a ticket, that's pretty cool. Europa League qualifying, Thursday 2:15, Maribor and Rangers. Now, you say Rangers are through
in the Europa League?
They're not. They're in pole position in this tie.
Right.
But I wouldn't have a ton of faith. They got the first win in the league at the weekend against St. Mirren and Steven Gerrard's first league win. But that this tie is not over. Rangers are not that good that you can say they're grand, they're going through.
Well, they will get back several first-teamers. Ryan Jack, Lasana Koulibaly, and Scott Arfield are all expected to be good to go for this one. They had been out.
I should tease something that's going to become a fairly regular feature.
Oh?
Gerard Lampard watch. Lampard and Gerard are now in management at two big clubs, Derby and Rangers, respectively. So I think we should do a little Gerard and Lampard watch. And it's also a nice way to look at the Scottish Premier League and the Championship, even though you...
Your favourite league.
You hate and deride.
I don't hate it, but you just have like this incredible affinity for it. And then Thursday, 2:45, Burnley and Istanbul Basaksehir. 0-0 heading into the second leg. Everything to play for Burnley. This will be a really nervous one at the Turf Moor. One goal for Istanbul, and who knows which direction that one could go to with that away goal.
We've Burnley. Gone to all the great European cities, you know. Aberdeen, Istanbul. And now we're back in Burnley. We're delighted about the football club. We're going in the right direction, Andrew.
People who go to Istanbul, I've heard incredible things
it's great.
About Istanbul as a city. Yeah. EPL this weekend, Saturday, 10 o'clock. Tottenham and Fulham.
A nice little London derby. The Andrew Lovefest derby.
Yeah, I know. I actually saw a stat about Fulham, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but apparently their win percentage in London derbies is the worst of all London clubs.
Yeah. So. I mean, they spent a long time out of the top flight, only to go back to whence they came and... You know, they're not a traditional powerhouse. They're a good team.
No.
A good team.
It's certainly not a traditional powerhouse. Now, I guess it does make sense here to mention what happened with Tottenham yesterday and White Hart Lane.
Yeah, it does make sense.
They have delayed the opening of the stadium. It was supposed to be open September 15th, I believe, for the match against Liverpool. It will not. And based on little things that you hear and trying to read between the lines, it feels like it may not be open maybe this calendar year. I feel like people just like expected me to be up in arms and outraged over this.
You're not a season ticket holder.
You're right.
And,
you're absolutely
you're
right.
You're not at the lane week in, week out, and home matters. It really does.
Yeah, and it was when we said at the end of our 20 questions, it was my number one thing, and you mocked it then, but now it means everything.
No,
boy,
I didn't.
Just this narrative molding.
No, I mocked the new stadium because you know me and new stadium. I'm a guy who believes in like kind of upgrading them and keeping their kind of core, essence. And that was the only thing I was mocking. But as Spurs fans wanting an actual home, a place to be, a regular spot.
Well, when I said that, it was laughed at. But nevertheless, look, I don't. They have now. Look, the club has not handled this beautifully.
They've handled it terribly.
At first, now it seems like I think bad PR from how they initially handled it is starting to come back on them, and I think they're starting to change course because they are offering refunds for the Liverpool match. As well as Cardiff, I believe, right after that. How things are going to go beyond that, I'm not 100% sure just yet.
The NFL had to release a statement, too.
Yep, the NFL had to move its game to Wembley. So, look, these things are always possible when you're talking about such large-scale projects. I mean, I'm sure Spurs' initial goal was probably to have this ready at the start of the season. So, you know, there was a reason that they re-upped with Wembley through the end of this year because they knew this was a possibility. If critical safety systems, as they put it, aren't in full operating order, they were essentially left with no choice. I don't think we want to see another DC United situation on our hands. So
no, I hear what you're saying, but don't forget that this is kind of a double sandwich that the Spurs fans have had to eat. They've been told, you know, well, they haven't been told. There was no signings made, right? And, I mean, let's
you're
be
right.
honest, you don't need to be an economist to know why that was. Well, at least deliver the reason we're not having signings on time, and they can't do that.
Yeah, you're right. It sucks, but it's, you know, they'll be in there soon enough. I don't know. You're right. If you're a season ticket holder, I'm sure you're annoyed. But hopefully the full refunds help. Whether or not it was as expedient as you would have liked it to be, well, that's up to each individual to decide. Saturday at 12:30, Chelsea and Arsenal. Boy, a tough start to the season for Arsenal.
Yeah, and you feel, I know it's only one game, but you feel like that Chelsea, even in their transitional period, might be a little bit further along than the Arsenal. This could be fun, though. If Emery's going to, you know, persist with the way he wants to play, I'm presuming, I don't know, does he drop check now? Does he bring Leno in? Like, at what point does the burnt Leno era begin for goalkeeper?
Well,
at what point does the Torreira starting era begin? Like, when do we see Unai Emery's preferred 11? And if they play like that and Chelsea are going to be like a Sarri team who like to press and win the ball, this could be fun. This could be high scoring, right?
Yeah, potentially. The thing that feels a little bit cruel to me, if this were the week where Emery decided that Cech needs to be removed and let's go with Leno, which I think we all agree will happen at some point. Leno wasn't brought in to be a backup. But it would just feel harsh to me to ask Cech in his first game to play this new style and do it, like I said, against Manchester City, who press arguably better than anyone else in the league. He didn't do it up to the standard that you like, so you take him out. Like that,
yeah.
That just feels like if Cech is performing like that against a side that doesn't really press and yet he still is having trouble playing the ball out of the back, then fine, we can have a conversation. But to take him out,
Andrew,
after just one game of playing that way.
How long did Pep Guardiola give Joe Hart before he got in Claudio Bravo?
I don't remember exactly.
Not
how
that long.
Well, I guess the difference, that's true.
And the express reason was the maintenance of possession from the goalkeeper. By the way, how has that really has come into vogue, hasn't it? Like, once upon a time it was, is he a good shot stopper? Can he come for crosses? He better have good feet now, for most managers by the looks.
Yeah, and it also would feel a little bit harsh because it's Cech against Chelsea. You know, like, I don't know. Sentimentality can't matter in situations like this, but it would just feel wrong if, oh, you didn't play. By the way, he did play, by and large, he did play well, I thought, against City. Like, he stopped Aguero on a 1v1. So
he did that.
Playing the ball out of the back wasn't great, but I thought
poor on the Sterling goal. He's got to get a hand out at least.
Man,
and I know,
I don't know.
It's not even right in the corner, Andrew.
Yeah, I don't know. He had no chance on the second one. That Sterling one feels a little bit harsh to
paging David
him.
Priest on this.
He had terrible defending in front of him. La Liga begins this weekend, Saturday, 4:15, Barcelona and Alaves, and Sunday also at 4:15, Real Madrid and Getafe, the new-look Real Madrid, new manager, no more Ronaldo. They are probably, we'll talk more about this in our later this week when we go a little deeper into La Liga, but they're probably the side that I'm most intrigued by heading into this season. I think most people would agree with that.
No, that's not the one I'm intrigued by.
Okay. Barcelona also are interesting to me, only because there was all this talk about Ousmane Dembele, and it felt like he had just fallen completely out of favor there, and they were looking to pull essentially a Bakayoko with him. And then he comes out in against Sevilla and scores a brilliant goal, and now it looks like he's right back into the good graces of Ernesto Valverde. And then MLS, Saturday, 4 o'clock, Philadelphia Union and NYCFC, both sides coming off impressive, dramatic victories. The Union, we didn't get a chance to mention this, are going to visit Houston for yet another crack at the U.S. Open Cup, a trophy that this club, more than many others, I would think, would really value just because of their repeated attempts. When they haven't had great teams, they've still been able to get to the final, both at home previously. They lost both of those, and now they'll go for it again against Houston.
And this is a team that's been around for 8 years now and hasn't really been a playoff regular.
Hard, no, not at all.
And you would like to see them. A bit of silverware would really kind of embolden the fan base.
Yeah. And then Sunday at 4, Atlanta United FC and Columbus Crew. This was the scene of the crime last season. Zach Steffen, when he really made a name for himself in the penalty shootout against favored Atlanta that day in the postseason. Steffen came up huge. Atlanta were taken out of the playoffs in front of 70-plus thousand fans. And the rest is history. Now Atlanta, I guess, gets a small chance to right that wrong. So there you go. That is our first reaction podcast to EPL games of the season.
Nice little soft introduction into the season. I thought it was a good pod. I enjoyed it. I thought me and you got a little bit ratty early on over Arsenal, which is a strange subject. But
well, I mean, that's maybe that's just where we're at now.
that you care more about Arsenal.
No, I would. No, not at all. I just, well, whatever. We don't have to rehash it. I mean, as it is, look, oh my God, we've done it again. I'm so annoyed with us.
Are we gone over an hour?
Of course we have.
People are happy about it.
No, they're not.
They are happy about it.
Stop. No, the people who tweet are maybe, but the people that I see the statistics of, they're just not doing it. They're just not doing it.
All right, let's get out then.
All right,
and stop wasting more time.
You're right, we need to get out. Hey.
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.